Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh. How you doing?
Oscar, Oscar, Oscar.
I mean,
we didn't have an opening number.
We've also got journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hello there, Guy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Margaret, would you like to thank your team?
I would like to thank my agent, my lord, the agent. No. I want that over with, actually.
We'll get there, Margaret.
Yeah, as a people.
Yes. And we've got pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Toxin.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
Karen, who are you wearing?
I am wearing, as I always wear, Husky Boys for Sears.
And you guys, we have a guest. We have a fully packed booth. We have a guest. It is a comedian, singer, songwriter, and Las Culturistas host, Matt Rogers.
Tell me something, Guy.
And just... Yes, and also just for Bradley, who's definitely listening, just for his knowledge, that's how you sing it, not incredibly flat.
All right.
Just kidding, you tried your best, babe. You tried your best.
Coming up on this week's show, we are going to Marie Kondo the Oscars. We are going to ask ourselves what parts of the Oscars spark joy and what parts need to be given to our local Goodwill or out of the closet. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest gems. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Our guest, Matt Rogers.
Okay, I'm fully going to jump into my own brand here. There is a new roller coaster that's going to be coming to the Harry Potter section of Islands of Adventure.
Uh-huh.
It is called Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure, which is too long of a title, but it is coming. Universal says it will be the most highly themed coaster they've ever had. It will be a launched coaster. I'm a big roller coaster freak, and
wow.
I'm a theme park. I call myself a theme park bitch.
Uh-huh.
More specifically, I'm an Orlando bitch.
Yeah.
So I go maybe once a year. I'm very excited. This will be opening on June 13th with maybe some soft previews openings in April.
Uh-huh.
So I will be there riding on one of those like little Hagrid motorbikes where he drives and you sit in the sidecar.
Yes.
And apparently there will be amazing animatronics that will, the magical creatures of the Forbidden Forest will be featured. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited about this. I watch construction updates on YouTube daily.
So this is Orlando only, nothing in Studio City.
Unfortunately, there is not a lot of room in Studio City.
Universal City. Yeah,
yeah, and Universal City to expand. But they are doing a Nintendo World in Hollywood, and they're hard at work on an update to the Jurassic Park River Adventure over in Universal Studios Hollywood.
I've seen that, yes. They really are.
What are your feelings about Legoland?
My feelings about Legoland is I have not been.
I haven't either, but I feel like it's my destiny is having a young child.
Margaret's got a one-year-old. In about a year, you're going to have to start going to Legoland and being gently bored by it.
And when you go, let me know, because even though I know that I won't necessarily like it because it's not like for my age group, I do need to see every theme park or amusement park in the Continental United.
Yeah, I'll alert you on my stories.
Absolutely. Alert me on the stories and I'll just be there and you'll be shocked.
Are you excited about the 35-minute Star Wars? Right.
Okay, can you believe? Apparently, this is going to be at least 20-minute situation, but I'm extraordinarily gagged.
No, that line will be terrible.
Will be terrible.
Well, they're saying that actually, if their calculations are correct, there could be like 12-hour lines for the Star Wars attractions when they come out later this year.
I don't understand.
So much for the fast passes.
Yeah.
It's psycho. I mean, like, they might have to do a thing where
you come on different days.
You have to reserve like a day to be able to even get in.
Wrong.
It's psycho, and especially like
it's not how it's supposed to happen.
It's like doing Yayoi Kusama's Infinite Mirrors, where you have to Infinity Rooms.
Oh, right? Yeah,
right?
Like it's like at the Broad.
You have to go wait in line for 7 hours.
Did you hear about the hotel? The immersive hotel.
Look, this has to stop. We have to do two shows today. Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh, what are you all about this week?
I'm going to keep it kind of in tone and quick. Kind Hearts and Coronets is a film that I watched over the weekend.
Hello. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, I watched it because it was referred to me by a writer friend because I was telling them a concept that I had in my mind, and she said, oh, you need to watch Kind Hearts and Coronets. Alec Guinness plays eight or nine characters in this film. It came out in 1949, and it's you just have to watch it. Like, I can't really explain it to you, but it's a couple of hours of him just being brilliant, and it's black comedy. It's considered one of the number 6 top best British film ever created. It's in the Time magazine's top 100 films ever created
since
1923.
It's like an iconic Ealing comedy.
Yeah.
Winter, you need to get yourself all over the Lavender Hill Mob. Like, this was like a school of British comedy.
Yes.
That was like smart and dumb and wonderful.
Yes. The scene where he puts the bomb in the thing and it happens, and that whole exchange.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Peter Sellers basically built his entire career on that type of comedy.
Yes.
I just would recommend it, recommend it because the one thing that the title is about, it means kind. It's from a poem, and kind hearts are more than coronets, and simple faith, more than Norman blood. And that means it's better to be decent than to have riches and power. And I think based on what happened, we're taping today on Wednesday, and Michael Cohen spent 8 hours pouring his heart out.
I spent way too much time watching that.
Yes. I think this really helps seal the deal for me that I would rather be a decent human than be rich and powerful.
Yeah. Amen.
Speak and Alec Guinness is a fucking queen.
Yes. Speak for yourself, but also that's true.
Right.
By icon, Alec Guinness.
Right.
Margaret Wappler, what are you all about this week?
Dame Emma Thompson.
Ooh.
Yes.
There's nothing like that dame.
Last week, somebody, I was feeling kind of blue at the end of the week. I'd had a tough week, and I asked people to send me some happy gifts. And one of our Brocketeers sent Emma Thompson's speech. Evelyn Archer sent it. Thank you, Evelyn. It's Emma's speech from the Golden Globes in 1996, where she's receiving her award for screenplay for Sense and Sensibility. Mm. And she just tosses off this thing that she reads off a crumpled piece of paper.
Emily
that,
Tompkins.
That, it, yeah, that like she had written in the voice of Jane Austen, basically receiving the award. And it was just so funny and witty and reminded me of all the like charm and brilliance that Emma Thompson has always given us.
And the rule of do material at the Globes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Oscars people, they're not going to appreciate it, but the Globes, and she had the crowd in stitches. I mean, there were so many lines that she just killed dead, and it was brilliant. And it like suddenly Emma Thompson was on my mind again, and I was like, God, I've got to go dive back into her movies. And then lo and behold, she writes this letter this week, this letter to Skydance Media, why I can't work for John Lasseter. And basically she was hired to voice in on the animated film Luck. And she had even started doing the voice recordings. And once John Lasseter was hired by Skydance, she was like, nope, that's not for me. And even though she was committed to the film and she loves the director and all this kind of thing, she's quitting. And I find the gesture really admirable because I feel like a lot of people are giving lip service to Me Too as a thing that's changing the industry, but not a lot of people are willing to sort of make this big, bold public gesture. And it did remind me, reading her open letter that she gave to the LA Times to print, that she is a phenomenal writer as well. I mean, she's actually the only actress who has won Academy Awards for both acting and screenplay, which seems mind-blowing to me that somebody else hasn't nabbed that at some point, but it's her. And she writes at one point, if a man has been touching women inappropriately for decades, why would a woman want to work for him if the only reason he's not touching them inappropriately now is that it says in his contract that he must behave professionally. So this is a blowback to CEO David Ellison, who when he hired Lasseter basically said, well, look, we put in his contract that he is to comport himself professionally. And it's like, well, wasn't that a given all along as the head of Pixar that, you know, he wasn't supposed to bombard female employees with hugs and prevent women from climbing up the ladder and so forth and so on. So I just applaud her gesture, and I think she's a queen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I semi-stalked her for a moment when, in between college and grad school, when I basically took a full afternoon off work to get my Sense and Sensibility screenplay autographed at the Third Street Promenade. So I'm totally with you.
Yes.
Good old 22-year-old Thompson.
Yeah. Do you still have it?
I think I do still have it.
Okay, good. Yeah. That hasn't been condoed.
Yeah.
Thompson, what are you all about this week?
I have to address this issue that was swirling around on the internet for about maybe 20 hours after the Oscars, but I was really in a huff about it. And that is everyone basically exclaiming that Gaga and Bradley Cooper, after their tremendous performance, on of Shallow at the award ceremony that they were all
I'm
in
sorry
love.
What did they perform?
I mean, you know, like it might be something. It might go a little bit like this. In the shallow, shallow, in the shallow, in the shallow, shallow, we're far from the shallow now. Oh, oh, so that performance, say what you will about it. Led to much speculation that Gaga and Bradley are in love and that Irina's going to be out on the street any second now. And I want to ask America, did you never see Neil Diamond and Barbara Streisand sing You Don't Bring Me Flowers at the 1980 Grammy Awards? Mm. I mean, it is possible to affect chemistry, desire, lust, and intimacy without having to fuck or be in love.
Yes.
I mean, this is what a lot of, frankly, many queer people know. You can have all sorts of, you know, intense desires. This is what acting and showbiz is about.
Yeah.
And, you know, there can be a chemistry there. And in my mind, Gaga and Bradley Cooper's is really about a codependency forged by their mutual ambition. And it's basically, you know, she supports him singing, he supports her acting. They know that they're in that ship together. They're there basically at the Academy Awards trying to tell everybody, oh, you fucked up. You know, we're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like,
give me more jobs.
Yeah. Give me more jobs. You know, like, see, we've got the real deal. And so they're wedded in that. Mm-hmm. If they boffed whatever, like, I don't think that there's any risk of anyone leaving their baby mama and toddler for this
not at
fling.
All.
It's a performance.
It. Yeah.
That's what performance is. It's literally a performance.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I have to say. Let's clear it up now, America. That's not happening. Get over it.
All right. We've heard the final word. this week, I'm all about something that's... a lot sadder than this other stuff, and I'm sorry to bring things down. But last week, a very dear friend of mine, who was also a really great comic, Brody Stevens, committed suicide. And Brody was somebody whose like life and work and mental illness were all very tied to each other. He had sort of like a manic episode about 5 or 6 years ago that he live tweeted, and you know that got a lot of attention. He had a TV show on HBO on Comedy Central where it was sort of explored, and it was so hard to know that somebody who had so struggled with this, lost the fight against what is a disease and not just not being positive enough. Let's hear some of Brody from a Just for Laughs set a couple of years ago.
It's been a tough year for me. My parents just got divorced on Christian Mingle. You know, I'm a sentimental guy. I am sentimental. I bronzed my first pair of Crocs. That's a fun joke. I like doing that joke. I will not quit on that joke. That joke will grow. It will blossom like photosynthesis with sunlight and water and positive energy. You help me, I help you. I scratch your back, you shave mine.
And the thing that's so hard about Brody as opposed to other comedians is that there's some people you can point to an HBO special or something and say like, ah, this was them at their best. And Brody Stevens was somebody whose magic was about the living moment, who was about being right in front of you, asking you where you went to junior high, and then knowing what the mascot was, if it was anywhere in Southern California or Arizona. He was a really amazing performer, and I think it's just, for me, when somebody's mental illness is part of the text of them as a celebrity or an artist. It is so easy to turn that into a caricature that you feel like is fixed or just sort of like their little thing. And I think it's particularly true of comedians where we dismiss it as part of the game and not something that needs to be managed. And I know, you know, as somebody who both suffers from mental illness and was a colleague of Brody's and a friend, like, I got mad at myself for not being more cognizant of the fact that it is a constant struggle. And, you know, like, maintaining that kind of mental hygiene is work for everybody. It was very hard for all of us. So please track down Brody Stevens' material online. Check it out. But also understand it was the best kind of art, ephemeral art that existed in the moment. And I'm just so glad I got to watch him warm up Chelsea Lately audiences for 4 years. Because it's a shitty kind of work that we don't think about. And he was so fucking good at it.
Can I just say that if you are struggling and you are having any distress, please reach out to a friend. Please reach out to a counselor. Please reach out to someone. And if you are someone who thinks that somebody is going through something, put your ego to the side, call them.
And also, it's a kind of health. Like, you know, going to a mental health professional and getting drugs. Yeah. I mean, drugs saved my life, and they are not a crutch or a bad thing.
Talking to a therapist.
Yes, it is health, and you need to go to professionals to handle it.
Yep.
All right, thanks so much. When we come back, we are going to be Marie Kondoing the Oscars. We are going to determine what brings us joy, and that which does not, we are going to put on the sidewalk.
Hi, I'm Joe Firestone.
And I'm Manolo Moreno.
And we're the hosts of Dr. Game Show, which is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, regardless of quality or content, with in-studio guests and callers from all over the world.
And you can win a custom magnet.
A custom magnet.
Subscribe now to make sure you get our next episode.
What's an example of a game, Manolo?
Pokemon or medication.
How do you play that?
You have to guess if something's a Pokemon name or medication.
Medication.
First-time listener, if you want to listen to episode highlights and also know how to participate, follow Dr. Game Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
We'd love to hear
from
you.
It's really fun.
For the whole family, we'll be every other Wednesday starting March 13th, and we're coming to Max Fun!
Snorlax.
Pokemon?
Yes.
Nice.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Hi, I'm Matt Rogers.
Hi, I'm Winter Mitchell.
Rorba.
She forgot this time.
Alan, don't listen to this one.
Margaret Wappler.
And Karen Tongson.
And this week we have decided to pile all of the Oscars on our bed, pick up every piece of it, and decide what brings us joy and what doesn't as we Marie Kondo the Oscars. So I now ask everyone to kneel briefly in a space that you think contains the energy of the Oscars and greet the Oscars. All right. I feel like we've honored it.
For better or worse, the Oscars never leaves me.
And I just want to say to touch the ephemeral before we go to the fundamental, I have to ask you guys, what aspects of these most recent Oscars brought you joy?
You know, it wasn't Olivia Colman winning, I thought was actually a victory in terms of the Oscars in the grand scheme, and it broke me to see Glenn lose. I was just so shocked and hurt and afraid for her in that moment. But you have to be real. That was the best performance in that category.
Yes.
I actually have some qualms about it being placed in that category because I believe that Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz were the leads of that film.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so I actually think it would have won in either category, obviously, as we saw it took lead actress. But in terms of what Olivia Colman was doing and degree of difficulty, iconography of that performance, I do believe we will look back at Olivia Colman's career and that will be like one of the ones we remember. Yes. Whereas you can't say that for Glenn and the Wife. And the only other person in that category I think you could say that about is possibly Gaga with A Star Is Born, because who knows how much she'll act. But what I appreciate is that the best performance won one of those categories, because that's so infrequently happens.
For me, that moment probably was the thing that gave me the most joy. And the thing that brought me the second most joy was seeing that Glenn Close showed up in a winner's dress.
Absolutely.
Which also
40 pounds of gold, baby.
Tore me apart when she lost. But the thing is that Meryl Streep won 2 by 82, which meant that she was wearing pajamas to the Oscars by 1986. And all of the other like icons of baby boomer actresses won in like the early 90s. And she's really the only person with just sort of in a way that it's like loomingly owed. And to have her as somebody who, this is not her first time at the rodeo, bitch has so many Emmys and Golden Globes, you know, but we understand this is the one that matters. And that she showed up wearing a fucking cape, looking like she was from Wakanda.
Dressed like Oscar himself, yes, in fact.
It brought me pure joy with sort of like a subset of joy. I mean, her checking out Billy Porter's dress, very good.
So very good.
Margaret, what from the Oscars brought you joy?
Honestly, no host.
Yeah.
It actually felt like we had tossed off this great weight. And it's not to disparage any individual host necessarily, it's just the fact that the ceremony moved at this great clip where all of a sudden it was just like boom, 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 awards are going out. And also like it allowed us to go more into the presenters and like the surprise element of the presenters and like seeing who they were going to bring out. And like I loved the Awkwafina and John Mulaney combination. Like there were several like combinations that I thought were great. And that's what I want to see more of. It's just a little more risk factor, and surprise factor.
And sort of related to what no host enables, the thing that sparked my joy is that there's actually room for people to spread out a tiny bit more around their acceptance speeches, especially people in some of the technical categories when we thought we might not get to see some of those categories represented in the primetime broadcast at all, that they would happen during the commercials. Mm. I was really touched by Hannah Beechler's acceptance speech for production design. Because I was sitting with a bunch of production designers, and they were all really excited. They knew her, and they were just like, they knew how nervous she was. And also, she gave a stunning speech.
She looked great, too.
She looked amazing.
That was one of my favorite
stunning
looks.
Speech. That's what sparked my joy.
Winter, what about you?
I think it's really good that Lady Gaga won Best Song and didn't win Best Actress. She won for what she should have been. She won for what she should have won for and not what she thought she was going to get. I hope she doesn't think that she was going to win Best Actress. But like,
I think she figured it out.
I think she figured it out.
After the Globes.
Yeah, but I think for winning for Best Song, I think for who she is and what she represents to the culture, that's nothing to sneeze at. Best Song, best winning an Oscar for Best Song for a movie that you starred in, she write the song?
She did.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't shit on that.
And also, kind of the best of the four versions of that mediocre
yes!
story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
All right, you guys. We have honored our present situation. Let us now pick up the pieces of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Awards of Merit and say, does this bring us joy? Let us begin with red carpets. Does the red carpet bring you joy? I mean, I'll open up by saying I fucking love them. I love people talking. I love I love the tiny little interviews you get with people who aren't always getting interviewed. I love Yalitza having to, you know, react and be in the moment. I like publicists pulling people around. And I love the fashion. I know that, like, we've been having this conversation about does it, force us to have conversations about women's bodies and stuff like that in a way that's inappropriate from, you know, fashion police days. But I feel like we live in a world now where you can play the game or not play the game. And it was really exciting this year to see way more men playing the game. And some women just saying, like, I'm going to wear cute tux and, not have to be, like, taped up.
Awkwafina dressing like my mom in 1978, for example. I will say, though, as a cord cutter, I find it a lot harder to enjoy the red carpet in a way because I'm just watching various awkward streams at various points, whether or not it's the EW People stream, because I don't have E on any major devices. But one of the things, though, that did spark me joy was seeing our own Lewis get to host the Oscars All Access. And at first I thought, are they only going to give Lewis the people who have been nominated for these categories, like these technical categories. But the minute like Richard E. Grant strolls up, Melissa McCarthy, and then when he sees Glenn Close and they're having that conversation, I was just super tickled for him and super thrilled.
When interviewing the people from The Favorite tonight, I keep thinking about Dangerous Liaisons and how I feel like you kind of invented The Favorite with the level of dastardliness in Dangerous Liaisons. Is that a movie you think back on a lot? I love the dynamic between the whole cast in that.
Oh, that was a great movie to be in. And that was a great character.
Having somebody at the rodeo who knows the Oscars as well as him,
right.
I was so jealous and excited all at the same time.
I think he's fantastic choice for that. However, by that same token, I think that we're missing humor. I miss Joan. You know what I mean? Yeah. I miss the days of Joan. Those red carpets are so humorless now, and now it's kind of, I feel a little bit weighed down when I watch it about, are they gonna ask what are you wearing, is it inappropriate, this and it's just gets to this level where
and
it's like
Ryan Seacrest is boring
at the end of the day, right? It's supposed
to
be
safe.
Fun.
Well, that's
like get someone out there that's gonna make some jokes, get someone out there that's gonna get a little messy. None of them do.
But Winter, that's a beautiful point. In pulling Joan and pulling Snark out, all we were left with was sort of like bland entertainment hosty people. Also, the first time I met Matt Rogers, I said, "You're so cute. You could be an e-host." I think we're marginally keeping the red carpet, but Margaret doesn't have to come.
I'll just click through the gallery.
So Margaret,
or come, just ask some fun shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Margaret said she was happy with no host. Does the host spark joy for us?
I'm glad there was no host this year.
Me too.
It really kept the pace and kept the speed going, and I didn't have to think about this person flailing or rising.
The fact that
you feel sorry for them.
I just don't want to think about you. You're not nominated.
That there was,
I don't care about
that. There was no. It is fun when they are nominated. That happened a couple of times, but it's fun that there was no story about having to sort of meta narrative, is this person succeeding or not? Though the thing that I love most about the host is the monologue, and the fact that they brought out Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph to do that job.
Yeah.
So we got those jokes. It was a little meta, but it was so satisfying. But like, Chelsea Peretti hosted the WGA Awards, mm-hmm. and she did 10 minutes of jokes that were like sometimes a little inside, but so cutting and so wonderful and so beautiful.
But they won't allow anyone to do that for the Oscars.
Yeah. I mean, I miss that. I miss somebody going up there, and I feel like we always tell the story of they failed, but like, I liked when Letterman talked shit at people. Yeah. I liked when Jon Stewart talked shit at people.
I never have to see Anne Hathaway and James Franco host something ever again.
Did you see what she posted
today? Yeah, she said she doesn't want you to either.
Her Instagram was like, just so everyone is aware, no matter what happens tonight, it has been worse. And it was a picture of her and James Franco.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
It's wonderful. All right, it sounds like we could maybe let the host go.
Because you can't do good comedy there, because then people are going to get upset. So you're going to have someone going forward that's like Hugh Jackman, which there is value in someone like Hugh Jackman hosting if they can really perform and you're given the opportunity to do that. But nowadays it's just like, I don't want to see a host because I don't want to have to worry about the state of their career afterwards.
So
all risk, no reward.
Is the good indie, is the alt room of Oscars hosting going and hosting the Globes and knowing you can get away with some shit there?
I think it is.
Yes. Yeah.
But what are we going to do with Bruce Vilanch?
or like Megan Mullally hosting the SAG Awards.
Yeah.
Next thing, the tradition of Best Supporting Actress first. Is it disrespectful to Best Supporting Actresses? Is it nice to like get them out of the way and have something that matters up top? What do you guys think?
Gotta get them out of the way.
I agree. I think it should be first. I think it gets it going. I think everyone's always excited about it's my favorite category, supporting actress.
Yeah.
And I always am so excited that we get to see something right off the bat. I think it's also like putting people out of their misery to have it first. I would be so upset if I was at the end of the night because you can't enjoy
it. A couple of times they pushed it and it was like...
They moved it and I was so confused. I was like, this isn't right.
Well, yeah. Jennifer Hudson won it in the middle of the show.
It was no Famouses for 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah, I think it's also like we need that amuse-bouche to like get us going. Yes, you know what I mean? Like totally. It can't be that dry in the beginning.
Well, this year they did screw with opposite sex of your category presents to you for the actors.
Yeah.
Did you guys Do you guys like that tradition, or do you think that that tradition can be screwed with?
I think they need to shake it up. I'm a little tired of the whole thing of, like, the men give the awards to the women and the women give the awards to the men. I don't know. It feels very, like, old-fashioned and silly. And
you want Adrian Brody to kiss a boy, Margaret?
Yes.
It has that, that gesture to me is, like, the, you know, when men wait for you to get out of the elevator first, which I fucking hate. Just come on. That's
I want them to go all the way and just like carry all my shit if they're going to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I am happy that they had them there to present it all, because I do feel that it is enough of a tradition now where it would be disrespectful to not have them, like to just not have invited Alice and Jenny this year, I think would have been shitty. But I liked what they did pairing them together. And I think they did it so that they could have more celebrity presenters on the roster. Obviously, they're trying to make this something people watch. But
well, having to shove in a couple of ABC TV people. Yeah. You know, like ABC was just so glad Constance Wu is a movie star now.
Yeah.
All right. So it sounds like we're willing. While we love the tradition, we are willing to let it go if it has to. We are keeping Best Supporting Actress at the top, and we are putting it in a very special place and reflecting on it. Mm. Next up, what about having Jack and Meryl in the front row so we can make jokes about them? We didn't.
Were they there?
No, this year we did not have it.
They've been gone for like I feel like a little while now.
I mean, Meryl's she's nominated most years. Jack's gone. Yeah,
didn't miss it.
Yeah,
we've heard every joke about them.
But I think Sunrise Sunset, like let Julia Roberts and Brad Pitt come and
take over.
Yeah. All right, I should have brought this up when we were talking about Alice and Jenny. But presenter banter. Mm. How do we feel about presenter banter?
I actually hate it I hate it in its current state, because even comedians seem to struggle with it. Like, it's I don't know. I didn't love the Aquafina and John Mulaney thing because I thought it felt a little stilted. Like, or I thought it felt like they were, and I love them both, but it just felt like when you put words in people's mouths who usually say their own words all the time, we know that what the difference is.
No one goes to their rehearsal, clearly.
Well go to the fucking rehearsal.
But also,
it's
like,
it's far and it's downtown.
And yeah, but girl, it's the Academy Awards.
They're at the Independent Spirit Awards. But like, they're not going to miss the rehearsal.
But also, like, open it up. Like, I feel like lesser award shows, like, let people write their own bits.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of times where people sort of, like, fucked with their bits in ways that were fun. Sometimes that doesn't work out. I'm torn as somebody who has had to professionally write it. I understand just how bad and stodgy it is. Mm. That says, I do love a good, the language of film is international.
I mean, like, I love that now more than ever.
What about film. The Melissa McCarthy in
Loved It.
Brian Tyree?
Loved it.
The
loved
best of
it.
The best of the evening.
Yes.
Yeah, but that was clearly like letting somebody be engaged in on a bit so that they were able to sell it. And I feel like not having a host gave them the bandwidth instead of, because like, on award shows, usually there are two sets of writers. One is working for the host, and one is working for the show itself and writing those shitty, stodgy, bantery things.
I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Is if you're going to have a three-hour telecast or whatever it is, I want to have the entertainment shift all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you can't always have the same person, Ellen or Jon Stewart or whoever the hell, because it's like, you just get tired.
Then you get to, like, pizzas.
Also, Keegan-Michael Key got to come down, have a bad bit that didn't land, and then he left.
Yeah.
And then we never had to remember
and
that.
I don't have to worry about him. Yeah. Like, quit making me do emotional labor while I'm watching the Oscars.
I know.
Did we not like that?
I liked it. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny.
I thought it was like impressive that he kept his core really strong.
Yes.
Because I was like, okay, he's got core strength.
Yes.
I liked that he tossed
his umbrella. She's in the gym.
I liked that he tossed his umbrella. I didn't feel like he had anything to do. Like,
right.
It wasn't
right.
A well composed bit.
It made me feel bad for him. Almost as bad as him being in, what is it, Friends from College?
Yes. All right. So, bad joke presenter banter, we could maybe get rid of.
Just get better jokes.
Recycle.
Tighten it up.
All right. So, we could get rid of the banter. Next up, what about performing all of the musical nominees?
No.
Oh, I am pro.
I'm pro.
Okay, why? Go for it, Karen.
I think it's, first of all, it's a really crucial category, and some of the songs can be duds. You're going to separate the wheat from the chaff by seeing them all performed. Also, when are you going to get the kind of stark contrast that you get between somebody like Gillian Welch versus Gaga, or back in the day, Elliott Smith versus Celine Dion, you know, in 1998? Mm-hmm. I mean, it gives you a range of artists who are involved in this process, who are stars in their own right, but kind of being, you know, not really the biggest stars of the night, but still bringing that power and range to it.
I love it for the same reason that Margaret mentioned before, is that it shakes up the evening a little bit. Yeah. I mean, I love a musical performance. I think that, you know, obviously the shortening to 90 seconds for a couple of them and not Shallow was obviously showing something. And that's fine. I mean, we don't need to see the whole 3 minutes and 30 seconds of I'll Fight, which I'll discuss later.
But the thing is like, when you've got some Disney, when you've got some Disney films, when you've got some, like, good showstoppers, it's fun. But when it's four ballads from documentaries, like...
I hear what you're saying. I just think it's like, you have Jennifer Hudson nominated you have Diane Warren's song nominated, and it's performed by Jennifer Hudson. If Jennifer Hudson is... If it's on the table that Jennifer Hudson should sing, she should sing.
She should sing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a big deal. If it's Jennifer Hudson singing that takes away 2 minutes from, like, the president of the Academy talking about how now more than ever, then I'm fine.
Though I have to say, this Oscars, did we completely lose?
Now more than ever.
Literally now more than ever.
Did we lose the accountants this Oscars?
Did we? The accountants are deep sixed. I mean, nobody wants to see their faces after that.
That's a beautiful point. Yeah. I was like, I miss the accountants.
Sure Price Cooper Waterhouse, they're real pissed about that.
Winter, what's your stance on the songs?
I don't need it. I just don't like singing on TV.
All right, you guys. Let's tap the speeches to wake them up. Okay?
Sure. Yeah,
let's tap the speeches. So I'm going to bring up some tropes from award show speeches that we see. And you have to say, do they spark joy? Do they not spark joy?
Okay.
Crying when accepting.
Yes. Sparks joy.
Crying? Yes. All of it.
I'm fine with crying. As long as you're not fumbling like whoever it was that won and was like, well, is it you, Reginald? I don't know. You, Sandra? Like whoever that person was.
The makeup and hairstyling people.
Oh, honey. Yeah.
There's
honey.
Three nominees. You know you have a good chance.
Okay, but let me ask you. When you do have three or more people who have won for something, do you like when one person does all the talking or when they cycle through?
You designate
designated survivor.
All right.
Arrange in advance.
Arrange in advance, designated speaker. We are definitely keeping. We are putting in a place of honor. Thanking your agents. Karen, should we get rid of thanking your agents?
Yes.
I mean, it's like, it's the bread and butter of the industry. It takes 1 second, half a second. It's
and
like
also,
NBD to me.
It's the place where you need to do it. Like, Emma Thompson should teach everybody a lesson from the Sense and Sensibility cycle. You fucking do your bit at the Golden Globes. And when you're, like, behind, when you win, have an Academy Award in your hands, you thank CAA, you know? Winter, what about acknowledging the other people in your category?
I think that you should do it. I think that it's a very... We live in a time where people are not nice when they're taking a public stage and they're so cutting to people. And I think it's important to say something about the other people because realistically, it was one of five of you. It could have been any one of five of you. No one, in my opinion, is a lock. Unfortunately for this year, I really think Olivia Colman, it was like no question.
Okay, well, let's talk about that because there have been three times in history, Valentina Cortese and Ingrid Bergman in the 70s, and then Lauren Bacall and Juliette Binoche in the 90s. And then this year where somebody was like on such a roll that when the other person won, they felt the need to be like, I'm sorry.
Like Adele and Beyonce at the Grammys.
I was just going
to
say.
But the thing is it inappropriate to acknowledge that one person? Because they talk shit at Olivia Colman for the fact that she mentioned Glenn and Gaga and did not say anything about Melissa McCarthy.
She can do whatever the fuck she wants. Glenn Close is an industry legend and everyone was talking about how she was the front runner. No one was talking about that with Melissa.
Yeah, and I think
they were
just,
all good performances.
Again,
all of
them. It was just genuine. Like,
those
are the people she wanted to talk about. And it doesn't mean she slights the other ones. She doesn't not think of them. It's just in that moment that's what grabbed her. And I feel like that's pure.
I think it is fundamentally about the artistry of the acceptance.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's spontaneous and you are like really just kind of on your feet scrambling as Olivia Colman seemed to be, trying to, expressing her like spontaneous overflow powerful feeling in that moment, right?
I mean, I bet you anything because Olivia Colman's a woman and so many women grapple with this, she probably feels guilty that she didn't shout out the other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She at the little press conference like immediately brought that up.
Yeah.
So it looks like we are definitely acknowledging the other people who were nominated.
Thank who you want to thank.
Yeah.
All right. what about, I'm going to group these together, telling your kids to go to bed and or talking about what deceased family member would have felt like seeing this happen.
Wow, God.
Well, if you live in L.A. and you're telling someone to go to bed, it's likely 6 o'clock. Yeah. So shut up.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Also, if her kids are in England, they're waking up. So
they were at her agent's
people
house.
Yeah, fly with their children, guys.
Right, okay.
They might be in the same time zone
sure,
as the person.
Sure,
I think
sure.
The go-to-bed trope is, like, way over.
Yeah.
I think that it depends on if there really is somebody... Like, if I were ever to win an award, there are a couple of dead people who I know that I would want to speak to.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I think it really, again, it's kind of on a case-by-case basis. I don't think it...
Will you be bringing a medium as your date?
Perhaps I will. A pet psychic.
I have some people to recommend.
That if I win an Oscar, I'm naming all my haters first and last name.
Like okay. Tina Fey that one year? That was amazing. Yep. That was a really fun yep. speech.
All right. A couple more things from awards show. Dance numbers. Do dance numbers spark joy?
No, no.
Only when, as a result of them being on stage, the singer gets whopped in the head like the girl from Moana. That was amazing.
That was
when
good.
The one dancer running around with the feathers like whopped her in the head and she just fucking
that was
steamrolled.
Good
spectacle. So good.
It's a variety show. I like having a little bit of variety. Yep. I like when you have songs that can like give us a moment for a number. There was one.
I like a bathroom break. Is what I'll say.
The award. The awards
exactly.
Did once have a dance tribute to montages where Savion Glover tap danced while a montage happened. Anyways,
that's cool.
Very stupid.
Actually, if they were all tap dancing, though, I'd love it. I love tap dancing.
All right. Dance numbers are in a bag. presenters making the presentation about them. I love this person, and I worked with them before. I personally felt that Samuel L. Jackson managed to do it both ways this time and prove the validity and importance of making it about you.
Yeah.
Because his Green Book face was magnificent and
it.
His I Am Giving Spike Lee his first Academy Award.
Both were professional.
Yes. Yeah.
But the Spike one was obviously from the deepest part of his heart.
Yeah. Yes.
And I loved it. I love seeing them grab each other and I thought it was beautiful. And also I just like Green Book. I mean, I feel like we're not even talking about the elephant in the room.
They don't fucking deserve us. Time, our time.
No, they don't.
Maybe they don't. But I just feel like everything was going so swimmingly mm-hmm. until that got Best Picture, and then it just went super south.
You mean best screenplay?
No, Best Picture at the end.
Oh, both.
Okay.
Screenplay I can live with, but like I'm talking Best Picture. I mean, the crowning jewel.
Yes. So we are keeping presenters making the presentation about themselves. Categories where you've just seen none of the films. Your documentaries, your animated shorts, your documentary shorts, your live action shorts.
I love those.
Okay.
I love those because I always get recommendations from like who wins, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like those period ladies, I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch that now.
I never would have known about Force Majeure if it hadn't been for the Golden Globes foreign language category.
I'll probably see Free Solo now.
I totally will. I'm totally going to see Free Solo.
I don't know.
What?
I'm totally going to see Free Solo. I'll just, like, you
what?
Know.
But I do love...
I didn't see RBG either.
They didn't nominate Three Identical Strangers, and I just
That's
don't understand.
That's ridiculous.
Or Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Rogers.
I mean, I do think it's fun to just sort of have a brief moment with the documentary shorts, particularly, where you're like, what do we care about now? Just sort of that way of like, which is the Holocaustiest? That will win, you know?
I always think that this is, if I'm always looking at where's the easiest place for me to try to get an Oscar in shorts... easy. I won an Oscar.
I will say with people who have a lot of filmmaking friends, a lot of people make English language shorts and they do the festival circuit and this whole thing. But breaking into the Academy's consciousness, into whatever like narrow group of people vote for that particular category.
Oh, because it's not so because easy. It's just that branch.
Exactly.
That's only people
it's
have been nominated.
It's just that branch.
Before.
And like the festivals alone are psychotic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's all like, oh, it's foreign. It must be better, you know?
All right. So congratulations.
Psychotic. That was great. That's a great word to use.
Congratulations, live. live action shorts, documentaries, etc. We are keeping you.
Yeah, but also we have to say, in addition to that, it is fucked up. There's still no stunt Oscar.
Yes.
Because if we can break this down into all this shit, and there's still these gaping holes where there's no Oscar. There's no Oscar for casting, and those people work really hard, and there's no Oscar for stunt, and that's a whole industry.
So real. So real.
Yes, I mean, come on.
Speaking of reels, what about the In Memoriam reel? Does the In Memoriam reel spark joy?
I love it.
Well, don't fucking forget Carol Channing.
Okay, that was the thing, is that this it should spark joy.
They done fucked up on that.
And they done fucked up this year. No fucking Stanley Donen. Like, I actually, this is terrible, because Brody was in The Hangover and Funny People.
You're right.
I was like, if they cracked it open to put Stanley Donen in, I wonder if they maybe gave Brody like a shout out. But the fact that they didn't for fucking Elaine May's boyfriend, who made Singing in the Rain.
A great film.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What dick editor is in charge of that? It's probably somebody in their early
mid-30s. I seriously think somebody finishes it on December 15th and they're like, anyone who dies after this, fuck them.
Well, no, it's never too late.
Your producers have to have a more subtle sense of those things. Yeah. And it's not even like there was, usually there's that person they hold on to for the last moment to be like, this will get the applause break. And there wasn't even that in this collection.
There really wasn't. That was also really awkward.
All right. So
it's Carol Channing, though.
No, yeah, I know.
It's audience break. It's literally
Carol Channing. Nominated for Thoroughly Modern Millie. Don't you fucking present.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Sandra
like,
Locke, two-time nominee Sandra Locke.
It's like you understand that, like, primarily known for other mediums, but nominated. Shameful. Like, same thing with Joan Rivers when she wasn't in the Tony Awards one. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's sick.
All right.
It's psychotic.
It's psychotic.
It's psychotic.
All right. Our equivalent of sentimental, well, I guess that was our equivalent of sentimental items, as the last thing we Marie Kondo. But what about the post-win press conference? What about that weird moment of making the person holding their Oscar go answer six questions from, like, a German person and some others?
So into it.
That's part of what they're supposed to do.
In fact, I would take that over the red carpet. Because as a reporter, that's when you can ask some wild shit. They've all gotten loosened up. The things have happened that are supposed to happen. They will talk.
But I will.
Spike Lee was crazy. I mean, he was all like
Olivia Colman
talking shit on the Green Book.
Olivia?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
That's very good.
Really was.
Olivia Colman full on shit on a reporter in the best way. Like, the reporter was like, how do you capture the comedy and the absurdity and the absurdity and the comedy? And she was just like, I don't know.
She's like,
what a
good
stupid
night. I'm
question.
Tired.
Yes. All right, you guys, we've cleaned up our award shows. Producers, next year, please take our advice. Listen to us for next year, you guys.
Can I just shout out the fact that the Pop-Tarts were pretty spot on about a lot of things,
yeah,
including the Olivia Colman Award.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Wow. So, you know, there we go. The new predictor of Best Actress.
Pop-Tarts.
Putting it out there.
I would not have thought that was going to be the upset. I thought if there was going to be an upset, it was going to be a deserved Oscar for Richard E. Grant.
I really thought so. I had such
hope.
I know,
that did make me sad.
Because that was objectively the best performance.
That was fantastic.
Not to be like, it was objectively the best, but...
But Regina King, we didn't talk about that. That's another thing that sparked major joy
for me. I felt like we had our only surprise was one of the two good things that happened. Like, you know, Regina King, and you knew that Glenn Close was, like, waiting there at the end for you.
But she's a survivor. I'm not worried about her.
Yes.
And apropos Regina King, we're recording today on 227.
Oh!
Yes!
Oh, nice.
Yes. Oh, my God.
High five.
I wish that Winter and I could just do a sketch where, like, she's on the second floor and I'm on the first floor.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
There's no place like home.
With your family around you, you're never alone.
Matt is very young and has no idea what he's doing.
What are these old people shrieking in my ear?
All right, you're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back after this.
In a world dominated by dude bro movie podcasts, only one podcast is brave enough to call bullshit. Who shot ya? The podcast that dares to say that white dudes' opinions aren't the only opinions.
If you have a movie pass, like, get a ticket to it to support Taraji, then go home.
Ant-Man seems so unnecessary at this point. Ant-Man is like a ketchup packet too many.
Who Shot Ya? With Ricky Carmona.
I wanted to see Wolverine kick ass and eat some popcorn and have a good time.
Alonzo Duralde.
Is this Andy Richter?
Yeah!
Oh my God!
And April Wolf.
I love Wild Things because you get to see Kevin Bacon's dick.
Who Shot Ya? Listen every Friday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Hi, I'm Matt Rogers.
Winter Mitchell-Rorbaugh.
Margaret Wappler.
And Karen Tongson.
And every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? Last time I asked people questions in this room, I did it clockwise. We will now do it counterclockwise. So I turn to you, Karen Tongson. I don't know your middle name.
Lee, as in Vivian Lee.
Oh, wow. That's very exciting.
I love it. That's a good
name. I like that Karen is assembled from pop culture.
Absolutely. Karen, Vivian Lee, and then Son of Tong.
Karen, what's your jam?
I know that everyone hates me here for bringing this up again, but I'm going to go all in with Shallow. My own wife is just like, you cannot keep watching that video in this house as long as I'm in the same room. But it's actually not the Oscar performance. It's not Bradley and Gaga. It is the Kelly Clarkson cover that everybody's sharing.
I just got emotional.
Oh, you know, because she can hit those fucking notes.
She's the best singer.
And, you know,
working.
Yeah, absolutely. And it may start a little wobbly. She sings it live. She covers it in her Green Bay, Wisconsin tour stop from February 15th. And it's, again, a little dodgy in some parts. She kind of messes up some rhythms in the beginning. But, you know, she brings it home. And hopefully this is the part that we're going to ease in here. I think it's a template for how we imagine ourselves singing every time we sing this song at karaoke.
Oh.
So, you know, see, the thing is, like, Kelly can just hit those notes with a certain ease and panache. And even for Gaga, there's a ramp up, there's a struggle, there's a whole muscular involvement. Mm-hmm. And Kelly just stands there still with, like, a glass of, like, a goblet of red wine in her hand.
She's effortless.
Yeah.
And she, everything she sings means something.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? She's always telling a story.
Behind these hazel eyes.
She's the best. She's all my right. favorite person in the world.
I was going to go counterclockwise, but Matt is all full of this Kelly Clarkson energy.
And I said thank you as if I was her to you when you said that, when you did that.
Thank you.
Matt, what is your current jam?
Okay, so the other best singer in the world is Jennifer Hudson. Now, she was put on stage to sing a song called I'll Fight, written by Diane Warren. Now, this is my jam because I actually have something to teach the children here today.
Okay.
Children, or Rocketeers. What do we call them?
Yeah. Rocketeers.
Yeah. Rocketeers, both. Great.
Either
so,
one.
Listen, things don't have to be good. So, take the Shallow performance.
Exactly.
Bradley was flat. Gaga was sharp. It's still iconic because they put their heads together and closed their eyes. It was good. We enjoyed it. It is a part of culture. Also part of culture is Jennifer Hudson singing a song that was meant for anyone but her. Diane Warren writing a song identical to a song she wrote a few years ago to try to win an Oscar called Grateful, sung by Rita Ora in some movie that Gina Prince-Bythewood directed. But it's just so funny to me, like, when you put a bunch of things together that try so hard to do something, and the result is something that's just fine.
Uh-huh.
This song, I'll Fight, should be sung by anyone but the best singer in the world, apparently. And I just think it's worth it to, like, indulge in this song, and it is my jam because it tries so hard to be important and good and is so mediocre. So I just think I enjoy it because of what it tries to do. But let's listen to I'll Fight.
Take up the struggle.
She'll take up the struggle.
I know it's a fight. So I'll fight. Fight.
Okay, cool. So this is anyone's eighth song on their album that's like they were forced to sing. I think Jennifer Hudson at the Oscars, this was the third or fourth time she had heard the song. It is just so funny to me. It sucks that Diane Warren, one of the great pop music songwriters of our time, does not have an Oscar. Good. But you can't be this thirsty. This is my jam because it tries so fucking hard, and I love things that just like are beautiful failures. And this song, like, while nominated for an Oscar, is just like so not worthy of that, but got performed at on that stage, and I live.
Margaret, what is your current jam?
I have The Muppets plus Queen. So the Muppets, for some reason, I'm not sure, but in 2009 just decided we're going to remake Bohemian Rhapsody. And they recorded a video and everything, and there's something like 200 Muppets in this video, which I didn't know there were 200 Muppets, but there are. And Queen lent them their tracks. Like, Brian May, like, listened to their plea, and he was like, you know what? I will give you the original recordings, and you guys go ahead and sing over this. So this is the Muppets plus Queen.
Da-da! I see a little silhouette of a clam. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
That's a fish guy, right?
Very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo, Galileo Figaro.
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this
monstrosity. No, no, no.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
No, no, no,
no. Is that Sweetums who's doing that, like, that part?
Margaret, do you know if the Pigs in Space are going to be re-recording the Flash Gordon soundtrack?
I can only hope. I can only hope if there's any justice and rightness in this world.
That's wonderful. Winner Mitchell Rohrbaugh, what's your jam?
This was a film that was, you know, Jennifer Hudson. I felt bad for her because she, like, was flat as fuck singing that song. And she's an amazing singer. And I like Dreamgirls a lot. But this is the Dreamgirls song that I just can't forget. And I really feel like his performance was highly underrated. He was nominated, right?
Eddie Murphy? Yes, yeah. He was.
Yeah, he should have absolutely won for this.
I never, never meant to make you cry. You are the only one I'll ever love in my life.
Hold it. You can't do it. I can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs.
One, two, three, hit man, bop the bop, bop it out of bebop, bop the bop, yeah, bass man, come on up. One, two, three, hit man, sound good, yeah, saxophone on the floor. One, two, three, hit it.
Jimmy Early.
James Thunder Early.
The Dreamgirls medley is the greatest musical performance of the Oscars ever.
Sure,
because
100%.
Beyonce, like, had some... Oh, Margaret has some issues. Beyonce showed up with something to prove. Like, at that point in time, Jennifer Hudson had an Academy Award in her hands, and Beyonce showed up and was like, well, let's, like... and, like, the amount that she left on that stage... kills me to this moment.
But you remember Jennifer Hudson singing Love You I Do.
Yeah.
And yes.
It's, in the real song, it's, you're the perfect man for me. What is it? I love you, I do. And she goes into the live performance, you're the perfect man for me.
Yes, exactly.
She was like, I'm looking at you in the eyes, Beyonce. You know, bitch. I have the Oscar.
Exactly.
It was the Game of Thrones. It was a Titanic battle. Yep.
I would watch a 90-minute film about
who
that.
I love Cersei. Daenerys and Cersei both.
Yes.
Beyonce is Cersei.
She totally is.
She can have anyone killed anytime she wants. Yes.
She moves her finger across her neck and it's done.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine is not Oscars related. Also, as one of my pop culture resolutions, I vowed that I would have no cop-out songs until the Feast of the Passover. I don't know if this counts as a cop-out song, but it's important to remember, when you come to that point where you're like, Oh, God, I've already heard all of the magnificent gay anthems that have been made. It's like, guy, only within your language group, only within the culture that you know. And so not so long ago, I asked former guest host Jonathan Roll to give me essentially the playlist that lives in the heart of 20-year-old Latino boys today. What of their moms did they love? And he introduced me to a woman by the name of Gloria Trevi, and I want you guys to hear Todos Me Miran.
Todos me miran.
Guy International.
Guy International.
Did I lose? Oh, no. Okay. Sorry. I don't know what I did to myself. I was having a moment. Look, just go read the Wikipedia entry for Gloria Trevi. What a fucking story. It is magnificent. It is achingly diva-worthy. It's also terrible. But also, the video for this song is first a trans woman, like, going through various experiences, leaving a man behind, being catcalled on the street, and then Gloria Trevi going through the same experiences, because being a superstar who was in prison for 4 years in Brazil is the same as being a trans woman. And then her performing to an audience full of drag queens. And I just have to say, it's too much, and Gloria, I love you. All right. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Brennan, with Margaret Wappler, Winner Mitchell Rohrbaugh, and Karen Toxin, and our special guest, Mr. Matt Rogers. Mr. Matt Rogers, if people wanted to learn more about you or listen to your podcast, where could they do that?
Well, I'm happy you asked. My podcast is called Las Culturistas. We are currently on tour. You can buy tickets to our tour dates coming up in Philadelphia, D.C., Boston, Austin, Dallas, and Houston, that's the last one, which will be coming up very soon on my website, mattrogerscomedy.com. And you can also just look for him. I believe in you. You're an intelligent human being. Also, you can follow me at Matt Rogers, though, at Matt Rogers, T-H-O. That is the abbreviated version of though that the kids are using nowadays. They say T-H-O.
I considered flying myself to Vancouver and just telling you guys I was going to be on the show so I could do a Canadian specific. I don't think so, honey. And then I realized it was JFL related, and I was like, JFL can go fuck itself. But that's personal. All right. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews in iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. This week, we'd like to thank... Oh, wait. We don't have any new 5-star reviews this week. Margaret, how are you feeling?
I feel faint. I just don't feel that great.
You look flush.
You guys, Margaret has a 1-year-old baby depending on her. You have to keep her healthy with your reviews. If you want to hear your feedback or even ask a panelist for advice, you can call my mom at 530-237-4108. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket. Or join our Facebook group and get in the discussion. We're a production of MaximumFun.org, and our senior producer is Laura Swisher, my oldest friend in the world.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.